Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC, and so most of these sermons are from me.
From the book of John, chapter 4, verses 7 through 15, and 21 through 30. A Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." His disciples had gone to the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have no bucket, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us the well and with his sons and his flocks drank from it?" Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but those who drink of the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give will become in them a spring of water, gushing up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I may never be thirsty or have to keep coming here to draw water." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father seeks such as these to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will proclaim all things to us." Jesus said to her, "I am he, the one who is speaking to you." Just then his disciples came. They were astonished that he was speaking with a woman, but no one said, "What do you want?" or "Why are you speaking with her?" Then the woman left her water jar and went back to the city. She said to the people, "Come and see a man who told me everything I have ever done. He cannot be the Messiah, can he?" They left the city and were on their way to him.
So last fall, our Board of Stewards, which is the group that is entrusted to govern our congregation, brought in an expert that would lead us in a seminar on the best practices of board leadership. We brought in someone, and he led us into understanding the 10 best practices in board leadership. It was incredibly helpful and very insightful. We went through the first 9 things, and I'm proud to report that we were doing most of the things on that list. And I would even add that in many ways we were doing them well. But then the facilitator, Todd, said, now, even if you do all nine of these things perfectly, you're still going to get stuck. You might get veered off course a little bit if you're not perfectly clear about why you do all these things. If you aren't perfectly clear on your vision, your mission, if you haven't adequately and articulately laid out the core values that are the bedrock of your mission and your ministry, these first nine practices, they're just going to be in vain. And then he went on to say, your vision statement, it needs to be clear. And it needs to be concise, probably no more than about nine words. And your leadership needs to memorize this statement and keep it at the forefront of everything that they do. And so that every decision that is made runs through the filter of whether that falls in line with the vision of who we believe God is calling us to be. And then he then challenged us, the leaders, the board of stewards of University Christian Church. How many of you can right now recite the vision statement of University Christian Church? Not a single hand went up. Not even mine. A few of us pulled out our phones real quick and began looking for the website to see if maybe you would find it there. And someone with quick fingers finally found it and said, yes, I know it, looking down at his phone. But it was not clear. It was not concise. In fact, it was four paragraphs long. It talked a great deal about our heritage, about how we began. It talked about our relationship with our brothers and sisters across the street at TCU. Now, granted, it did talk about what we believe God is calling us to be about, but it was sort of hidden amongst the history. It seemed to us to talk more about who we used to be in the past than who God is calling us to be in the future. Todd, the expert, said, healthy churches have a clear picture of their purpose, a clear vision of why they do what they do, a clear understanding of who God is calling us to be. And so before you do anything else, I would recommend that you get really clear about who you are, about what God is calling you to do, who God is calling you to be. And because once you get clear about that vision, that'll be the most important thing that you do in this next season of your ministry together. When he said that, it reminded me of something that Helen Keller once said. The only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision. And in many ways, that's sort of where we were. We were clear, but not completely clear on where we were going and who God was calling us to be. Tony Robbins once said, getting clear on your purpose is the first step in turning the invisible into the visible. And so that's what we set about doing. The stewards called together a group of gifted and talented and creative, committed folks from our church, some of folks who have been members here their entire lives, others that were relatively new to the community of faith. There were folks that were young and folks that were young at heart, maybe we should say. There were mostly lay people. There were two clergy members on this team, and we set the task of listening, of discerning, of articulating who God was calling us to be. And it was rich and meaningful work. But it was also somewhat difficult. It took a lot longer than what we thought. We thought we'd be able to do this in just a few weeks, but it ended up taking more like 5 months. And there were some great conversations, sometimes heated, spirited, we'll say. But those debates, those dialogues, as we wordsmithed and worked on individual phrases, it was good debate, and I would argue that in many ways it led to a better vision statement. And I want you to know that we worked really hard to keep it short, to keep it succinct, short enough to memorize so that if you're ever on an elevator and someone asks you about your church, you can tell them by the time you reach the next floor. It's our elevator speech, I guess you could say. And I'm really excited about what came out of that process.
And along the way, we gathered input from different folks. We checked with the clergy staff, and what we presented to the Board of Stewards, to the rest of the assembly, and to the entire church staff, across the board, they loved it. And they received it enthusiastically and unanimously. And the vision statement, what we believe God is calling us to do, the task that is set before us, it's found on the cover of your worship bulletin this morning. And I want us to pull that out and read it together. It's right there in big, bold words, right in the middle of the bulletin. Transforming the world by living out Christ's courageous love. Transforming the world by living out Christ's courageous love. Now, admittedly, that is a high calling. That's a pretty big, audacious goal. But church, I believe strongly that amazing things can happen when a group of people are united around a common purpose, a shared vision, especially when those people are empowered by the Holy Spirit. And the cause is doing the work of God. Now, next week, I want you to know that I'll be starting a 6-week sermon series on the core values that will be the foundation of our life and our ministry together. And over the next 6 weeks, we'll walk through these. But this morning, I want to talk a little bit about this vision statement that we just read together. And I want to share some thoughts on it. I want to help us to read between the lines a little bit about what it might mean for us, what it might look for us, how we might begin to make that a reality, how we might make the invisible become visible. Now, you've probably heard me say before that there's essentially two types of churches. And I'm not the first one to say this. This is something that has been said around here for a long time, that there's two types of churches. There's answer churches, and there are journey churches. The answer churches are the ones that are offering, in my estimation, 25-cent answers to $100 questions. Then when something happens and there's a question, a theological or ethical question, they are quick and decisive to be able to say, this is the answer. Except, as I said, sometimes those are 25-cent answers to $100 questions. But the journey churches, on the other hand, are slightly different. They may be able to say in those moments, I'm not exactly sure why this is happening. But I promise you that I will sit beside you and I will journey alongside you until together we arrive in a place that we can discover the presence of God in the midst. You see, we have come to the realization that we are unequivocally a journey church. We've come to realize that faith is not so much about collecting answers as it is discovering the essence of spiritual courage, because it's courage that we need for the journey. And maybe it's the case that Christians should be defined not necessarily by what we know, but rather by whom we know. Not by the answers that we can give, but by the questions we are courageous enough to ask. That's what I understand it means to be a Christian. And I know of no other way to live that journey than by opening wide to the very heart of God. Now, in that text that you heard just a minute ago, this woman who comes to Jesus in the middle of the day, she was fairly certain that she knew all the answers. She knew that women and men in that culture were not to be speaking in public. She knew that Jews and Samaritans were bitter enemies. They didn't have anything to do with each other. They never shared anything in common, especially something like a drink of water. She knew that her history, her background, her reputation would essentially exclude her from the grace of God. That the road that she was on would not necessarily lead her down the path of righteousness' sake. But what we come to discover, what she didn't know, is that that encounter with Jesus would change her life. It would transform her entire world. Pretty soon, these simplistic answers led way to courageous questions. She began asking, where can I find this living water that you speak of? At the end, he's asking her friends, can he really be the Messiah? You see, these questions touch the heart of God. It leads to her having these moments of wonder and awe. I once heard it said that the longest distance in the world is the 18 inches between our head and our heart. The longest distance in the world is the distance between our head and our heart, because we can know something, but we can't experience something in the very depths of our hearts. For some, that distance takes an entire lifetime to make that journey from head to heart. For the early church, those first Christians, faith was about serving the world. It was about transforming the world around him. And that was completely countercultural to anything that was going on in the world at that time. At that time, the world was dominated by Rome. And Rome focused on ruling, it focused on domination. And so as these early Christians went about living their lives, it would raise all sorts of questions from those people that were around them. They would see the way in which they lived, and they asked, and pretty soon they would start to ask questions like, which is the better way? What we see around us in this world, which is brute force, or would loving acts of compassion and generosity and justice be more effective? Would lives be changed? Would the world be transformed through reasoned arguments and clearly defined doctrine? Or people who live out their faith in everything that they said and in everything that they did? Would loving actions speak louder than angry words? You see, this was a whole new way of life in that day and time. And they lived this way because they had this profound understanding of what it meant to be a person of faith, of what they were doing with their lives. You see, they had a vision of God. They believed that God was calling them to be this. And they called themselves the body of Christ. And in these communities, the Greek word there is ekklesia, which is the word in which we would later call churches. These communities, these loving, generous, peace-loving communities, Jesus was present in ways that went beyond words. It went way beyond simplistic explanations. And these people, they would invite people to join them. And they would eat with them. And they would share their lives with them. They would celebrate with them when they had good things going on in their lives. They would suffer with them when things were not going well. They would share life together. And these people, after seeing the hungry fed, the lonely loved, the poor honored, they would begin to ask, why do they live this way? Do you really think this is what it means to be a person of faith? You see, they believed that the church was a living, breathing display of this whole new world that God was bringing about. They believed that they were participating in the transformation of the world as they knew it. I believe strongly that that's the type of church, that's the type of community of faith that God is inviting us, that God is dreaming for us, that God is calling us to be at University Christian Church. Do you know people that don't necessarily have to spout off about how they're right and everybody else is wrong? There's something going on inside of people like that that is so powerful, that is so tangible, that anytime I interact with someone like that, I begin to ask questions, sometimes of myself, but oftentimes of them. They are so compelling. They are just, I find myself dying to know why they are the way they are. And you want them to explain the reason for the hope that is deep within us. That's the type of people that when you're around them, you have the sense that you're in the presence of something holy, something divine, that Jesus' life is embodied within them. In many ways, that's what it means to be church. This group of people, this community of faith that through their compassion and through their generosity and through their joy, through the grace that they extend to others, you find yourself believing, wanting to know more. Maybe not maybe not just in your mind, but also in your heart. Tony Campolo is one of those people for me. He's a retired Baptist minister. He also was a sociology professor. At one point, he was a spiritual advisor to previous presidents. He is a prolific author, a dynamic preacher, although I will tell you that he has this reputation of getting so worked up that when he preaches, he tends to spit a lot. In fact, I saw him about 25 years ago. I went to a youth ministry conference, and when he was introduced and as he walked out, everybody in the first three rows all put out rain ponchos and put them on because they knew that when Tony got to preaching, things were going to get wet. A few years ago, Tony went to Hawaii with his family on vacation. Now, he was coming from Philadelphia, and he was on the Eastern time zone, and he found himself early one morning, about 3 a.m., unable to sleep, unable to make the time up or the time difference, and so he just found himself out wandering the streets at 3 a.m. The only place he could find open was this little diner, an all-night diner that was open. He went inside and ordered a cup of coffee. And the only other customers that were in this diner at 3 a.m. was a group of prostitutes that had just finished their work for the night. As Tony sat and listened, drinking his coffee, he overheard their conversation. And he learned that one of them, whose name was Agnes, the next day was going to be her birthday. And she confided to her friends that she had never in her entire life ever had a birthday party. A few moments later, after they had left, Tony found out from the guy behind the counter that they came there every night. And so Tony asked him, he says, you know, would it be okay if I came back tomorrow night? And can we throw a party for Agnes? And the guy behind the counter, his face got this huge smile upon it, and he says, on one condition, I get to make the cake. 2:30 the next morning, Tony showed up. He had gone to the dollar store, and he'd gotten crepe paper decorations and balloons, and he'd make this great big cardboard sign that said, Happy Birthday, Agnes. And the guy behind the counter must have gotten the word out, because at 3:15, every prostitute in Honolulu was in that diner. It was wall-to-wall prostitutes and this short, bald Baptist preacher. Well, at 3:30 on the dot, the door swung open, and in comes Agnes with a friend. And the whole restaurant starts singing Happy Birthday at the top of their lungs. And Agnes's mouth fell open, her legs buckled. And as they kept singing, they brought out the cake, and tears welled up in her eyes, and she began to cry. When they stopped singing and it was time to blow out the candle, she took a deep breath, but then said, is it okay if we keep the cake a little longer? I don't want to eat it just yet. In fact, is it okay if I take it home with me? They never did eat the cake, and she took it home with her. In fact, she carried it out of the restaurant like it was the Holy Grail. And when she left, everyone in the place just sort of stood there, motionless, stunned. And not knowing what to do, not knowing what to say, Tony did what most preachers would do in that situation and just sort of said, "Can we pray?" And so that group of prostitutes and that small Baptist preacher grabbed hands and they began to pray. They prayed for Agnes. They prayed for each and every one of them. They prayed that everyone would know the goodness and the grace of God. After everybody left, the man behind the counter said to Tony, "You never told me you were a Baptist preacher. What kind of church do you belong to anyway?" he said. And Tony said, "I belong to a church that throws birthday parties for prostitutes at 3:30 in the morning." The guy behind the counter says, "No, you don't. There's not a church like that. If there was, I'd join." What if there was a church like that? What if there was a church like that right here in Fort Worth, a church that would go out of its way to embody the transforming love of Jesus Christ? What if there was a church of people who don't claim to have all the answers, but instead were willing to partner together, to journey together, to ask the hard, courageous questions, to love extravagantly? What if there was a group of people, people like you and me, that took it upon ourselves to live in such a way that would transform the entire world around us? Did you hear what the guy behind the counter said? "There was a church like that, I'd join." Something tells me he's not alone. That's the type of church that I want to be a part of. How about you?
So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.